Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, June 29th, 2017. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convened for a workshop. It's 9 a.m. Might have already said that. First item on the agenda is legal counsel, order number 2017-030 in the matter of sale of county real property by sheriff sale. Mr. Watson.
Okay. We are preparing to take 25 properties to auction on August the 8th over at the Ambassador at 2 o'clock. We had 12 properties left over from our last auction, which was on April 25th of this year, and we have added 13 additional properties, three of which are dedicated to forestry, and then of the new ones, and then of the new ones, the remaining balance are previously dedicated to parks and recreation.
Okay. Any questions? What are you asking for us today? You're looking for an approval of that list to move forward and be posted and advertised appropriately.
Yes, we'll need to take this order that we've got presented today to weekly business section. As business session next, I believe it's on Thursday next week.
Yep, it's the 6th. Are we approving the financial transaction of holding the note potentially if buyers choose to take advantage of that opportunity?
I don't believe that needs to be done by order. Rather, it's an internal procedure. And we are still working on the details of the contract.
It doesn't need to be done with this, but it might be done by order or resolution. It probably should be codified somehow so that there isn't any ability to say that it was changed. You know, wait a second, that's not what I understood. It's like, well, that was the order that was approved. That is the structure. It's what it's always been. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So it will probably be by order or resolution, probably order.
That would be fine.
But it doesn't have to be done with this
batch.
Yeah.
Right,
so
we would still need to have
there's a couple of questions that we had as far as resource utilization in the interim and stuff like that. So we'll get all those questions answered. Maybe, can we see that on the 6th? Because there's an admin that afternoon.
Yeah.
Cool. That would be a perfect schedule. That we move along with that at that same time.
And then, well, how soon after will the financing aspect come up? Because that would be something I think we should advertise.
I would agree. I think it should be put out to the general public
earlier rather than later.
Yes, yes. And once we get ready to post this list of properties, I need to have my I would need to update my website in order to reflect that is now an option as well.
Yeah, it would be really great if it was done by the 6th. So that's a full month in advance of the sale. You'd have to advertise it.
Yeah. Very good.
It's in the home stretch from what we've seen. Mm-hmm. There's just a couple of things. You know, the specifics, the broad strokes are there. Maybe the contract language isn't 100% done, right. But you know, the 9%, the 5 years, the max payment style stuff, all of that is pretty secured.
Yeah, I believe those details are pretty solid.
Yeah.
Currently, it's a matter of the details of the land sales contract itself that's being polished.
Would there be a place in your advertising from the approval? Well, you're not getting approval until next Thursday anyway,
right.
So. If we approved it Thursday morning and then approved Thursday afternoon at the admin, that structure, you know, you could go forward and advertise that day with those elements.
Because I think that's a big issue on this sale coming up. That's not been done before.
It really is.
I think, you know, when people, you know, they're going to get that impact of the first public notice.
Right.
And probably decide then and there if they want to go a bid on it.
Exactly. This financing option is a huge plus to the general public. It really opens up the gate to a lot of individuals that just simply don't have a ton of money sitting aside. It's folks that really will now have an opportunity to bid and participate and acquire properties.
I'd rather that option be up front rather than an, oh, by the way.
Oh,
yeah.
Did we tell you about Pi-A?
Yeah, nobody would take advantage of it if it was after the fact. So,
but if we can get it all done, I don't know what the legal, you know, how...
Safely target that date.
We wouldn't publish the contract. We'd make it available. And I think we should say
just
that.
The fact that,
but
that
the structure of it is, you know, those other things, those are pretty much done. So I would suggest that by that Thursday, whatever advertisement, you put that stuff, those elements in there.
Right, and we've already begun, actually...
I think that could be that.
This morning, Pat has forwarded to me some possible language for our advertisements that
cool.
go into the newspaper.
That'd be great.
So we've begun, Pat's already begun working on that.
English?
In English.
English language.
Yes, yes.
Do you prefer a different language?
No.
She might have to outsource that. How many languages do you speak, Pat? Legal and English and
Beecher.
And Beecher?
Yes, he's on his own wavelength.
I took 2 years
That's
of Spanish
awesome.
And I can order a beer. Sometimes too.
You find the restroom. Okay, that sounds really good. We'll move that forward.
Yep.
So item number B is, Michelle, do you want to come up? We have draft 2 of ordinance number 2017-001. We need a longer title for this ordinance. It's an ordinance amending the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance 94-4, as originally adopted and subsequently amended to implement certain changes relating to new definitions, creating and adding new sections 1772.060.C and 72.060.D, clarifying accessory structure standards 73.030C. Should be a point in there. Prescribing composition of walls, fences, screens, 83.020.C, setting limits for grade and fill, and amending the tip for 75.060.B to restrict exterior lighting. I looked at it, the redline version, and it looks like everything we had wanted to accomplish. So,
I do have a couple points to
great.
Bring up with you.
Good.
Well, if you go to page 2, first of all, under lighting, and I just want to make sure this is what we want to do, it says that no indoor lighting used in or by an indoor marijuana growing.
Are you on the final of the red? Because I don't have light.
Which one are you looking at?
And maybe we'll put this on pause for a minute because I think you're looking at draft 2, and we've now got a draft 3 hot off the presses.
Well, no, I sent it to you. I said they have 2.
Okay, so they don't have draft 3.
No, but I can give them draft 3.
Okay.
This was something you and I talked about.
Take it from
later.
The top.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, this is, if you have written on that one, you can.
I did write a little bit on there, so there we go. There. Let's copy.
Three is the cleaned up version, basically. But I did, the board at one time, we had discussed getting rid of the fence setback. And I think if we're going to do that, we could do that now pretty easily. So
a fence section. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, so if you go to page 2, that highlighted yellow area basically gets rid of the fence setback.
Don't we have to repeal a certain section as well?
No, you just have to get rid of, if you go to A2 and B2, if you just cross out what you're not sight obscuring, that allows all fences to go on the property line.
Okay.
It's a pretty easy amendment. But I do have some things I have to bring up with
My
you.
My point is, isn't there another part of the code that says that there's a setback requirement and such? My concern is that without repealing, deleting one section, somebody can read 73.04 or whatever and say, shoot, I got to put it, because that's what the code says. I don't want people to have to read the whole code to figure out there's an inconsistency, and what's to say that this amended code trumps the other code. Does that make sense?
I had looked at that.
Okay.
That was two ways to amend the code. With the section that you're talking about, Commissioner, is it also says at the end, you know, everything has to have complied with setbacks unless specified otherwise, elsewhere in this code or something. This is one of those areas that would be elsewhere in this code.
Is there really any reason to have that other section of the code? Because if there isn't, I don't mind amending that other section and removing those elements. This is great. I think this solves the problem and puts it all together in a fence section. But it might be, I don't want people thinking, well, marijuana has the opportunity, because these were kind of somewhat marijuana-focused, some of them are, that only marijuana operations have the ability to put fences on the line.
Oh.
Does that make sense, too? I'm looking for devil's advocate opportunities for people
sure.
to misinterpret what
well,
we're trying to
well,
do.
This section of the code applies to all
everything.
Uses. You know, it doesn't even mention marijuana. So it's basically that cleanup, that one
okay.
of those cleanup things. But I do have a problem with this section that I have to talk to you about. I had explained to you earlier that previous directors would pass policies.
That's your.
And then they would become code for the staff. So ever since I've been here, you know, they've been saying fences over 7 feet need a permit. And that is because, and I thought it was an amendment, and I realized last night, no, that was never actually amended. It was four policies over the years by previous directors. And I understand why. So what they did is they said no, over, even though the code says residential ones need a permit or have to have standards if they're over 6 feet, and in commercial industrial it has to be 8 feet, policies that have been implemented for years say 7 feet. I understand why they did it, because the state building code regulates over 7 feet. You know, so they were trying to be consistent. This is one of those that should have went through the amendment process years ago, and they didn't. So for years, staff have been ignoring what the code says and just implementing over 7 feet. I think now we should clean that up.
So how do you propose to do that?
We just change under A where it says 6 feet and under B where it says 8 feet. The 6 and the 8 just become 7.
Which section, Julie?
So just real quick, like here, it's kind of hard to see, but right here there's a 6. You see it, Dan?
Yep, right here.
Yep, and then below it there's an 8 in the under B.
So you
and
want them all to say 7?
Well, state building code.
But that's state law.
For building safety standards.
Right.
Not for through DLCD.
Okay.
So
because under the code, legal counsel has the ability to change the code
mm-hmm.
if to make it current with state law. So
yeah, and you know, we do that on certain things. For example, if the state passes something, for example, they allow commercial uses in agriculture, in agricultural zones, if they're ag-related. The state has passed that, so that trumps basically what our code says, which says you can't do it.
Right.
But this is one that was in the... it's not in the statute, it's in the specialty codes. So however we want to interpret it, you know, I'm fine if we look at it that way. I'm just saying, let's clean this up while we're here.
You just said the state code trumps anything. We do something here as far as fence height or whatever, and state code comes along and it just wipes ours out. Or because I've had inspectors saying, "Oh, I have false state, the state code, and I can't deviate from that."
And that's
no matter what,
so that's my building safety side
okay.
of the department. When there's something in the... So building safety, they don't have a code like the planning side of the office. I shouldn't say that. They don't have a county-adopted code like the planning side. They have to follow the Oregon state specialty codes
okay.
that are adopted by the state. And then the building safety side of the office enforces the state code. They don't have any county code they enforce. It's just state.
Okay.
There are some the county could adopt, which you'll see one of them coming forward. They have the option to. But so far, everything the building safety does is all by the state specialty codes. The planning side has ORS, OAR, and county code that they enforce. They don't enforce state specialty code. Planning side doesn't. And it's the state specialty code that says you regulate over 7 feet. I shouldn't say regulate, you permit over 7 feet.
Fences right on the property line. Is that going to... So the guy gets out there and he builds his fence down the property line, and the neighbor said, that's not my property.
We have him get a survey.
And they have to have a survey.
Yeah, we, you know, we don't know where their property lines are,
right.
So we tell them to get it surveyed.
We don't require it to be surveyed, though.
No.
It's just a good recommendation, because if you do build it and it's wrong, and your neighbor takes you to court, you have to move your fence. If they do it in a reasonable time and it doesn't get legally complicated, if it's over 10 years or something like that, 7 years, and you've been appreciating that, blah, 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 it can get really complicated really
fast.
What
were the setback when you said we used to have a setback rule? Wasn't that to keep things like that from happening?
There's no guarantee that that's going to happen. I have a fence on my parents' property that's 50 feet off the original line. If I wanted to exercise like eminent domain, we've been utilizing that ground, running cattle on it for decades. That fence is 50 years or 100 years old. I'm moving the fence back to where the line is. But I don't have to. I could say, nope, that's my property. I've been cutting firewood on that, the whole nine yards. That's where I thought the line was. And I can rebuild that fence where it used to be. And I think that's legally defensible. But that's not our job. Our job is to say, you should build it on the line.
Yeah.
Get it surveyed, and you won't have a problem. And if you don't, and you build it, and your neighbor sells the property, and the next guy says, wait a second, that's not where the line is, and I'm going to have it surveyed, and it's 20 feet off, you probably have to move your fence.
Well, I know that a lot of complaints that I hear is about, you know, I would rather they not have fences because they're ugly. But is the state ever going to change that? They were supposed to look at fences this last year, and I don't think.
Yeah, so the state used to require the solid fence or site of security fence, and the state also required it to be, I think it was 8 feet if I remember correctly. And there was a lot of complaints about that because, of course, what popped up.
They had to get a permit.
Well, they didn't, but
yeah.
You know, and what they did is they put up the tarp fences to get around that. So there was a lot of complaints. So the state changed it to say they need to have a security plan reviewed by the state, by OLCC. And what they do now is they will allow chain link fences now, and they pretty much look at them on a case by case basis. So
now that doesn't have to do anything with medical. That's just on recreational, right?
Right.
OLCC only oversees recreational. That doesn't have anything to do with medical.
Right.
It does with medical.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this applies again not just to marijuana, but to any fence that would be built in the unincorporated areas of Josephine County. It would say you no longer have to have a setback from the property lines. Yeah. So, is there something you want to put up on the screen?
No.
So,
I'm satisfied with that proposal. I want the other section removed. I want our, we need to adopt an attitude of when we go forward, not right now necessarily, but as things move forward, that we're cleaning up as we're moving forward and making things right. So that there isn't that ability to be misinterpreted, or I'm bringing in the code and it says it right here that I, blah blah blah, have to do this. No, you didn't look at page blah blah.
Yeah. So that section, I really can't.
We don't have to do that right now.
Oh, I was going to show you in the code.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
It's just the general intent.
Okay. You're talking about this one with the.
That original right, you know. When we were emailing back and forth, there were two options.
Yes. But why couldn't we put something in that to reference this one?
We could. One of the drafts said in that section where it says unless permitted other or exempted otherwise or whatever it said.
Yeah.
That drafted, I had in there, can I just see it real quick?
This is the new colors. They look different.
It would say, this is what it says right now. The following minimum requirements, and there's a table of setbacks, shall be applied to all permitted, administrative, conditional, and accessory structures allowed by this code unless specified otherwise. What it could say is, and accessory structures except fences allowed by this code unless specified otherwise. I mean, that's one option.
I was thinking that you could actually say under Article 70, you know, be very
I'll
specific
let you guys work that out. I really don't care. It just needs to be really clear. So
otherwise, it's ambiguous if you have this in here.
I don't want that. I want it really clear to somebody that fences is not, it can't be up to interpretation of the next director.
Yeah.
To
yeah,
say, I see this as an accessory, you know, blah, 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 structure, and it needs to have that setback.
No,
and then they get into a back and forth with the applicant who says, well, I'm reading this section here that says that fences don't require and I can put it on the fence line.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's at my discretion which portion of the code I choose to interpret. No, it isn't. It's at the board's discretion for policy drafting that it's really clear that, no, our intent is that the fence lines be permitted to be on the fence, on the line.
So
and I agree with that.
One other occurred to me that if you, we're also including a definition of a fence. A new definition.
Mm, yes.
And if what if you said, here's what it's not. It's not an accessory structure. I mean,
then we wouldn't require permits on. And we do want to require permits on them if they exceed that height, because that triggers them to come in and get the building safety. When people hear, oh, you don't need a permit for it, they just go on their merry way and they don't realize, oh, but there's a state code that's going to require a permit on it.
So the idea is that for this part in the structure height and setback, we want to make sure it doesn't include the fence that we're... Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So somehow you have to make that clear,
right,
that over 7 feet does require a permit, but it doesn't trigger the setback requirement.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty key.
Okay.
And that over 7 feet requires that permit. Under that, you don't. And I like that it's consistent with the Safe Building Code. That's really key.
Okay.
So are you okay with us also changing the 6 and the 8 to the 7?
Yes.
Okay. Now, before we move on from page 2, then, I want you to go back up to 72.060D, under lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to make sure we're all clear on this, because this we get a lot of complaints about this, that the lighting only has to be shielded if you're the dwelling on the adjacent lot can see it. I want to bring this up because we have had the famous one you're probably aware of where they called the fire, somebody called the fire department thinking there was a big fire, and they got up close and realized it was just the greenhouse lights. You know, so you get a lot of complaints, people driving by that think they're ruining the night sky. Or maybe they haven't built yet on their lot, but they don't like the neighbor's lights on the greenhouse. The way this is written, it just says dwellings. That you, in order, if you have to watch your lighting, it's only if it's visible from your neighbor's house.
That doesn't fix the lighting up the night sky and calling the fire department.
No, it doesn't. I think we need to strike dwelling. I think we need to strike, okay, so where it says visible from dwellings on adjacent properties, I think we just need to say shall be visible between dusk and dawn.
So from anywhere?
Yeah.
Three properties away?
I mean, those are the complaints we're getting.
Three?
On D, page 2. D lighting.
Oh, God. I'll bring it back there. All exterior lighting on.
I can't solve every complaint. So another thing, Julie, just policy refining.
Yeah.
I'm okay with getting complaints. We can't solve every complaint.
Oh, I realize that.
I know, but you reference that from time to time, that we get a lot of complaints on this. That's okay. Sometimes.
Yeah.
We're trying to mitigate the challenges between neighbors, in my opinion. Not everybody. And so... you know, that's industrial parks or what have you. People are not maybe going to like those lights. I'm not going to ask them to shield those lights. That's their industrial park. That's what it's there for. So to a degree, you know, we try to do the best we can. At the other end of the spectrum, this seems really challenged to enforce, you know.
Well, it's, you know, and...
Because you don't have out... You don't have code enforcement officers.
We don't.
You know, 24/7.
It's
so
it's not
as though you're going to have to send somebody out there. You can't just say, "Oh, well, I got a complaint on this, so it must
right.
be true." How are you going to? That's what I mean about, like, to the nth degree. Let's try to do what we can for the neighbors, and see how we do there, and if we make good progress, you know, that would be a win for me.
Yeah, I also look at...
the people who have to live with it every day is the ones that I'm... Not somebody who's driving by, you know.
Okay, and I think those were probably why initially we had dwelling in there. But,
yeah, I don't...
You know, I do also look at... And I just always keep in the back of my mind when I'm looking at something is the user, you know. Is the public... Can they easily understand that code or... You know, I don't want them to say, well, I have to do this if I have this neighbor, or I have to do this. I just want something that everybody understands, the level playing
field. Yeah, I agree.
No lights visible between dusk and dawn, or no fences, no fence.
You bring up the industrial side of it, but if we started out D with, if we start out C, in the RR1, RR2.5 zones, and for lots of it, if you started that sentence out under the lighting D section, that would limit it to residential. And then, as you're industrial, if you're an industrial, commercial, whatever, you're lighting, you do whatever you want.
And ag and forest commercial.
So.
Yeah, because...
I think residential is where you get the
I've heard complaints about people who have their neighbors are bailing 24/7, and they're going to do that. And I will never do anything to restrict that, because that's what we do. We bail at the best time for humidity for the hay. It lasts for 2 days, you know. If you have it out there for a week, it's dried out and no good anyway. I mean, 3 cuttings, whatever, 6 days? That's the price that you pay, you know, for agriculture.
Well, I don't think that's where the complaints are coming from.
I have heard complaints from people. My neighbor's bailing all night long, and it's like it's 1 or 2 days a year, people, you know, and I don't know.
Well,
but this situation is ongoing. It's an imposition to the neighbors, and that's really what I see as like, you know, if they have a greenhouse, that's 365 probably. They're doing that every day.
Well, that's why I'm suggesting taking the beginning of C and boom, moving it also into D,
under
lighting.
Under
RR. And only do it under RR.
So it's on RR. Something to think about.
Yeah, the challenge with, I think, making too many broad strokes changes is it does take time to think about it, and that's the arduous process of moving these things forward. Is like if you change the intent, you know, you do need to think about the unintended consequences, because it's not exactly a dynamic issue of changing an ordinance. You know, it's not an order that next week we can fix. It's like, well, you set that path in motion, and then for bringing back an ordinance and and amending it is the same process as putting it forward. So it really needs to have good thought. I think you're right. I think that there's things missed, and it may not be perfect. At the end of the day, your enforceability element of it and the intent of what we'd like to do is mitigate the challenges between neighbors. If we could focus on that, I think that helps us not make it such a broad issue of the neighbor driving by or the tourist driving by who doesn't know. It's what is that person who has to deal with it day to day? And if that solves it, that's great. I endorse that idea of putting it to RR, but I just want to solve that problem however we can with neighbor to neighbor, everyday imposition of light coming onto their property.
So leave it the way it is, just make it applicable in RR? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know about that. That's his suggestion.
Yeah, I'd say that. Move, just add this sentence from C down to D. It goes on to say no indoor lighting. We use the indoor outdoor growing areas, so on and so forth. And that we haven't decided what we're going to do about growing areas in RR anyway. So that if we're going to do it this thing would follow through with no matter what we do.
Well, My only pushback would be if you have a neighbor who's on another a resource zone, do they not have, you know, their residence? I don't know. Should they have the same?
Now that you're now we're down to taking a real general stroke of all of our R.
Yeah, no, it would have been
you
our.
Say, well, now if this guy, what if?
And well, the code, be what the if. Way we were writing it wasn't to apply to just to RR. I can
right.
see what your intent is. It's applying, you know, all where it's growing everywhere. To dwellings. So whether or not that dwelling is on an RR or resource zone, it really doesn't matter to me. It's really that imposition to the dwelling. But if it's being originated on an industrial or commercial, I think that's what your point is. Where the light's coming from.
Right, where's the light? Where's
industrial
right now, right now you've got indoor growing and you've got greenhouses and stuff on 5-acre parcels, and you may have 14 of them, and some of them are on residential, and that's where the people are getting, that's where their bone is to pick.
Mm-hmm. Dan, are you familiar with the Shadowbox case?
No, I've heard the name. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So just as an example,
there's 14 out there.
14 right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one that's a pretty famous case. So as an example, that is on ag, zoned ag, and all his neighbors are zoned residential.
Mm. So what do you do? Good point.
I will say this too, that a lot of your recreational growers, especially the ones that are trying to do it right, they have the light depth, is that what they call it? Shades that come over the greenhouse.
Or blocks them out at night.
Blocks them out at night. A lot of them do.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, I hate to use the term more responsible, but a lot of the growers are trying to protect that night sky anyway, regardless of what zone they're on.
I think D is fine just the way it is, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's just leave that. Okay, so let's keep going. I just
appreciate everybody's indulgence. This is really challenging, and it's not something we do every day, so it's a little, frankly, outside of maybe our typical core competency.
And that was it.
But it's complicated. We've got to get it right, because it's a 4-month process almost for adopting this once we get it going. Has a minor ability to be changed between first and second reading, so it can't change the intent, but if we needed to change wording or what have you a little bit, we can still refine it, but it needs to be almost perfect going forward.
And E on the back is just strictly for parking area improvements, correct? Page 4.
It only applied to parking before, but now it even says, if you have extra lighting, basically keep it down and hold up to Shute County's code.
And when I read it, it's so vague and obscure. It really doesn't say anything as far as guiding. This one actually has some.
That's clear.
It is clear. Helps clean up our code. Provides clarity to people doing stuff. And I think it improves the situation between neighbors. Mm.
It's in the off-street parking article.
Yeah, I just realized
that. I didn't know that it was supposed to apply to other than that. So.
Oh, it is?
What did you do, Pat?
Yeah, she just caught something. The lighting, we're talking
about.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
No, I didn't know.
The exterior lighting.
I like the wording of E. I think E sounds really good.
Needs to apply, though, to other than parking areas, right?
Right, because the security system is not, the marijuana security system isn't on typically on a parking area. It's on the crop.
So it applies to the property itself.
So
I've seen two so far,
figure out where that goes.
And they are not limited to just the crop. They're on fence lines, they're on parking structures, they're on gate access points.
Right.
The camera and lighting system is everywhere.
Yeah, and that's what they just caught was this is under the parking section.
Uh-huh.
It needs to apply to more parking. So we'll just put it in there, right? We'll fix that.
Okay.
Okay.
Everybody just sit down and stop looking at it.
Yeah.
Well,
we have to.
And we're going to keep looking at this for the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was good progress made, I hope.
Another question. Right now, to keep this on the track that we were going on, it has to be ready to go to the paper by next...
not today.
No, it's not today. It's next week. I have it down on there. It's on the 5th.
Yeah, because Melissa asked me this morning, she said, just let me know what happens after the meeting because I have to get it to the paper today. So maybe because of the holiday, does that maybe mess up her schedule?
I don't know about her schedule. I know that...
Can you guys...
Yeah, we'll take...
Get it done today?
Well, that... I have a notice is going on the 5th.
Okay.
But if she... I thought she was using my timeline, but maybe... Maybe she's not going to be here on the 5th.
Well, we did change the weekly business session day, so it could be...
Right, she might be looking at the other
change
one.
From that.
So, yeah, because we just need 10 days. And the first reading is the 19th.
Okay, yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is, do we need to bring it back to you for a final before the notice goes in the courier?
I'll read it, if you don't mind. I can...
Sure.
Yeah.
I think you know what we're looking at.
I think so.
Okay.
So I can keep...
That work.
And you'll have another draft of three, or you'll have draft four.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for right now, I can throw two away and recycle that.
Great.
Yes.
Anything else? Feels like I had something for you guys, but I can work it out individually. Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We really need to finalize the Cannabis Advisory Committee thing. I probably could do that today. You know, there's really not that much to change. We need to take a look at the bylaws.
On the bylaws and the makeup of the committee?
Yeah, the makeup is just the number. I think we put in there that we wanted these general people, but we're not, like the economic development, we didn't get anybody applying specifically. We can put them in to the places that we want. We either pick 7 or 9, I think.
I think we went from, I think... We had 13 and we went to 9.
Okay, 9's fine.
That's what I remember.
Up to 9. I think we put in the words up to.
Up to 9,
we don't have to populate it.
We're
going to
get,
I think
we're gonna
get
a lot of people
with applications.
But
it can't be unwieldy.
But how? The sooner we notice that, the sooner we can put it out?
Well, the board has to approve it by order, and so maybe if I can get it done today, we can change things, but otherwise we can move it to the weekly business session on the 5th for approval. And get it forward there.
By Commissioner Morgan, if you can get it to her electronically.
Yeah.
The 6th.
6th.
Okay.
Okay. I'll see what I can do on that today. There was one other one, but I can't remember what it is today. I think we're good. Okay.
Okay. That might work.
Department business, we've got human resources, discussion on recruitment. That one's still in progress, JJ, so we'll...
we'll table that for now?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I'm working on a proposed restructuring of that program, given the challenge. We don't have the resources fiscally to come up with a competitive wage for our lead applicant. That's the challenge, and so... I think that I've got a proposal that could work that doesn't cost us anymore, but we still get good quality coverage and maybe even improve the program. So I know that's vague, but...
The wants and needs that the lead applicant sent over, is that negotiable at all?
It is, to a degree, but our gap is fairly significant between what she's currently receiving and what we can really top out and afford. And so... J.J. Arthur and I have worked on kind of what those numbers look like, and we'll propose that, you know, what I would recommend is the final number of what we can achieve. And so I don't know how much you want to be involved in the financial element of it, but past a certain grant point, because we get money from the state, it's all coming out of general fund.
Right.
And to put that position at an NU comparable, it's fairly high, and it actually leapfrogs over some other people who manage larger budgets and larger staff. And so that's a little challenging on the hierarchy around the county. So it's not undoable. Board can do anything we want. But I think that the other proposal actually doesn't rock the boat internally, solves it fiscally, and structurally we get the applicant we want. Who knows? We'll see.
Well, you guys work that out. I'm golden.
I'm looking for the best of every, you know, all the options, all the stuff.
Yeah.
So it's in the works. It's just a starting of a conversation. Ultimately, the board would have to approve that structure and
okay.
and
all
stuff.
Right.
I can't make that decision. It's just a thought.
Well, and it may be a moot point. So we're researching to see whether it's more than a moot point. Because and what we'd like to may not be an option for us. If it is, we'll look at some other things.
Okay. Item number 2 is request for job description addition. We talked about this yesterday briefly
yes.
at the weekly business session. So I assume you got that job description advertised.
Yes.
And so kind of cart before the horse, we need to approve it and approve adding it to the structure of
yeah.
public health. So
it's a deputy director position. The one thing that warrants a little conversation is I put that position salary at NU21, which is very close to the director, and I did that because her nursing program supervisor is at that same range, and the comps show that would be at that's an appropriate range. The challenge with that is that makes the difference between the deputy director and director very close. And I would recommend moving the director from an NU22 to an NU23. It still is a close range, but at least there's two ranges in between the two, and it'll address the compression issue.
Is there an NU20?
There is. There's an NU1. There's an NU. The lowest is like NU4 or 5. The reason I put NU21 is so you have the director who's at 22, you have her nursing program supervisor, which is at 21, mm-hmm. and then her second charge would be lower paid than someone that would be beneath them. So, I mean, they are medical professionals, so you understand that their salaries are high because they're medical professionals. But it made more sense to me to have it at a comparable rate of who would be their subordinate, frankly. The director is below her comps. I mean, she's about 9 or 10% below her comps. So moving her up is still would be below her comps, but it would address some of the compression issues.
I, you know, it's ironic, not necessarily, so you're reducing, technically, I mean, I think administratively, you're reducing the workload of the director by mm-hmm. dividing it amongst the deputy and mm-hmm. the director, and then you give the director more money, you promote, necessarily,
yeah.
the director for that structure change?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't affect, this year's budget wouldn't affect it, but it would...
I'm not necessarily yeah. worried about the budget. I think that the minute
yeah.
change. It's just structurally, it's not consistent with what you would do administratively. So it's one proposed solution.
Yeah.
I challenge you to see if you can come up with something that works for, you know, what we're trying to achieve. If you were giving the director more work, taking on mm-hmm. another program, you can justify. But we've also removed animal control and tried to put in a lead supervisor in that position, that program, right?
Sure.
So you're taking away responsibility, but you're adding. That's tough for me to endorse as a solution. So
I'm looking at the deputy. Is the deputy director going to be in charge of what was the one sleeping nurse?
Probably they'll be in charge of. So you'll have the director has oversight of the entire department. The deputy would have oversight in conjunction with, but the whole department as well.
And the challenge of reducing the lead nurse person is, I remember maybe 6 months, a year ago, we couldn't fill that position because mm-hmm. we don't pay what the private sector pays for this.
Yeah.
So you almost, I don't know, it's really, he's got his work cut out for him. How do you structure this, actually accomplish it fiscally to actually recruit somebody?
Well, and I would say that our current salary for the director, whether we have a deputy or not, you look at the inflationary increases that go on with healthcare professionals, and director of public health is a healthcare professional, it has outpaced inflation. I mean, that industry is a growth industry. So, I mean, I would say that
we're not keeping up with inflation, is what you say. And then on top of that, the industry is outpacing inflation, so mm-hmm. you're double, triple behind.
So, I mean, I get the stance that, hey, we're going to give you someone who's a higher level administrator that's going to take some of the administrative burden off of you, and that's a good reason not to increase the director's salary. But if the director's already underpaid based upon the industry by 10%, and we're only increasing it by 5, it is...
I think it's the timing of the issue.
Yeah.
You know, if we'd have made the adjustment, if we'd have made the adjustment to the director...
6 months ago or whatever.
Yeah. And then I don't know. It's not an easy solution.
I would look at the nurse supervisor stepping down as an opportunity to say, okay, the next person come in is going to be at an NU20, not a 21, so you don't have depression. You're looking at it from.
But it's tough because we, like I said, it took us months and months and months to recruit.
Wouldn't get anybody to apply.
That's the challenge. In certain industries, I would completely endorse that. Especially Southern Oregon. Nurses in Southern Oregon, frankly, make more money than nurses in Portland because there's a nursing shortage in Southern Oregon. And in order to get people to come here, you have to pay them more. And
why is the compression element such a deal? It feels as almost like that's a specialty contract position, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't necessarily have to have, you know, they're just doing what they're doing. They're a position that has special qualifications. And so I don't know that it's such a big deal to me that the person supervising makes less than the person who's doing the job. I don't know.
Well, they still could, even if with 10% differential in the range. If I'm the second and I'm at step 7 and you get a new director who starts at step 1, the director will make less than their subordinate, even in the current structure and even with my recommendation. But I'm an advocate that the director should have a higher potential earning than...
That certainly makes sense.
And 5% is not very much differential between the lead person and the secondary person.
But if she's a deputy director, then all of a sudden she or he mm-hmm. is going to say, well, I'm doing everything that she's doing. I need to get the same kind of pay. Going at it from the bottom side up.
Well, I mean, ultimately...
Vice president never gets as much as a president.
Yeah.
That's true, but by how much? But you are the guy that has to go out and then get the applicants. You can... If you don't put the right worm on the hook, you're not going to get any fish.
It's a challenge because you want to have a salary that's commensurate with what the industry requires.
That's done in government all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and we look at not just government, but, I mean, the challenge with public health is we're not competing with government as much as we're competing with private sector. And I say competing, but it's kind of a bit of a farce even saying that. A healthcare administrator at AllCare or Asante makes 80% more than what we pay. So, I say that we're competing with, but if you have a talented healthcare administrator, they're not going to, unless they have a passion for public health, they won't work for public health because they can make way more money in the private sector. So we have a budgetary constraint and we pay what we can afford. So we mix what's the industry versus what we can afford, and do you have a passion for the public? And we have been able to find people, but you try to balance those things.
I don't like the idea that I have to make a decision on something that I've just been presented with right here today. So,
and we don't have to make that decision
whatever
today.
Whatever you can do to kind of facilitate and move this forward without, and give us a weekend to mull it over and figure out.
Well, I was recommending we move this to the next week's business session.
Okay.
So you don't have to make the decision today.
So we've got ourselves a week more time to figure it out. So we just need to be... you gave us the job description. I need a chance to review it. Is there anything special in it that we need to review?
I don't think so. Basically, I've taken the director position, removed some of the aspects to it, and there's a few things that are different, but it's a similar, it's a management position that is similar to public health director, just a little bit dumbed down, I guess.
I don't think I'd use that term, but yeah.
Yeah.
okay. Well, we'll take a look at it. And we need to move forward to approval for the next week's business session. And it's just a consent calendar item, in my opinion. So,
I had one other thing that I wanted to bring up that was in this vein, but so I was looking at, I'm going to give you a little handout here. So I was looking at kind of our organizational structure for management in general. Copy for the record. So what I have is some org charts. On top is our current org chart. And kind of the thought of it is that we're trying to explain the differences in the different types of departments. Some of them are called divisions. Some of them are called programs. Some managers are called directors. Some of them are called managers. Some of them are called supervisors. And the genesis of that differential came when we were a much bigger county as it relates to staffing. We used to have 700-something employees, and we had very large departments that had sub-departments under them. And we don't really have that structure anymore. And so it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to differentiate the departments that way anymore. So if you flip to the next page.
Which one are you looking at?
So these two pages are our current structure, and this is kind of a here's what this means page. And frankly, when I first got here, I looked at this and went, I don't know, I don't understand this. It took me a little while to kind of get it. And I guarantee the public, when they read this, probably doesn't understand it either, because it's confusing. So what I'm recommending is changing the structure to this page, and it's much simpler. All the departments are basically departments. We don't really differentiate. And what's important is you have the public. We ultimately answer to that. They direct the Board of Commissioners. They also direct the elected officials. And then the Board of Commissioners has oversight of all the departments. And all the departments are fairly autonomous, unless it is standard within that industry. They should all have a similar title as in director. So like you'll notice I'm an HR director, we have finance director, technology director, but some of them are called program managers, but they really are autonomous departments. So they should all just be whatever director. It's a bit of a semantic change. I mean, I base their wage study on what they do, not on their title. I think the one exception would be probably veterans, because they have an industry standard for their title of veteran service officer. But other than that, they should all kind of have the same. We structurally don't differentiate, really.
Sure.
And you'll notice there's a dotted line between Board of Commissioners and electeds. Ultimately, the electeds answer to the public, but you are the executive head of the county, and you have oversight of county policy and budget. So there is a level of oversight of the board to the elected offices, but it's not the same level as it is with the rest of the departments.
So you're going to keep consistent and call those the assessor's office?
Yeah.
The lobby office?
Yeah.
And then the other ones will all be directors?
Yeah. Well, they'll be, you know, whatever department, and the head of that department is a director.
Great. Sounds good.
I think that makes structurally, it's easier for people to understand, and there's some consistency.
It's kind of been long overdue. So when the airports manager goes to the state airports meeting, probably everybody else in the room is the airports director, and Larry Graves is our airport manager, and manager of the year, director of the year. So it's the same thing with forestry, parks, a lot of programs that should be regarded as directors. It doesn't mean anything different really internally. I understand this structure, but I've been living it for 6-7 years, so...
And I get it now, but when I first came in, I was confused by it.
Right. And it really doesn't make a point. It doesn't do anything. You know, even if I understand it, what does it matter?
We used to have, you know, a big department, and that department would oversee public works and building operations. And speaking of building operations, I made another change that I think is pretty relevant, and I know Commissioner Hare brought it up, but I thought it was a good idea. So one department's name is Building Operation Maintenance, and it makes more sense to call it facilities, because our acronym is BOM, and that's a bit of an inappropriate acronym to have in a courthouse.
So I literally was saying, BOM and BOM. BOM!
So, I mean, again, it's a semantic thing, but really it's, well, that's, you know, so calling it facilities instead of calling it building operation maintenance.
Sounds good. Let's move those forward if you don't have an objection.
Oh, I think I can clean it all up.
So we'll get some resolutions that change the name from building operations and maintenance to facilities. I know that talking to Mr. Johnson, Director Johnson, he had some issues with it not encompassing the full scope of what they do. I'm okay with that. There's really no office that's probably totally appropriately named, and Board of Commissioners would be the first one.
Yeah.
It doesn't encompass everything we do. And so I get that, but people understand what facilities means, and it means something different probably in every county. He has some property management. There was a question in this conversation that JJ and Arthur and everybody has had earlier of whether or not we move property management from legal to facilities, and I can't endorse that right now. There's a great working relationship, I think, between those two programs, but it really needs to probably stay in legal where it is. So until I see a need there as a liaison to both of those for quite a while, BOM for 6 years, property ever since we started it, it's not broken. So
I like it.
Yeah.
Whenever possible, putting elected officials almost on parallel track with the board is probably an illustrative thing that the other electeds would probably really like to see.
Yeah. Well, and I color coded it to where the electeds have the same color.
Parallel. That makes a lot of sense. Okay.
So that I'll move.
Really good.
We'll move that forward.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Item number 2B is Public Works. We've got an agreement to guarantee future dedication of right-of-way and street plug crossing permit. Arroyo Drive?
I call it Arroyo.
Oh, good. I like that.
Works. What do you call it?
Arroyo.
Arroyo.
I lived in Arizona for a while.
That is Arroyo, isn't it? And that's what I've always called it. Arroyo.
That is great.
I don't care what time it comes. It's Arroyo.
Awesome. I didn't know you guys could do
that. Yeah, we worked on that yesterday with
we just started it.
Bob. We're going to have it dialed in most often. Helps.
All right. Well, I was going to talk right off of that map. So the property owner owns that large parcel there right above Arroyo, and this is on your Exhibit A in your packet.
Great.
This property is in the old UGB. We have old and new UGB with Grants Pass. This is old UGB. He's going to build a single-family home on that large parcel. The only access this gentleman could get was across our street plug, which is located there at the northern terminus of Arroyo Drive. And that's what we're seeking today, is a street plug crossing permit for a single family home on that large parcel.
What's the large parcel zone?
It is the one just north of the street plug.
What's it zoned?
Sir, I don't know the zoning. It's in the city's UGB.
Can you click on it? But you're not in the, you're in a map, you're not in the...
You can get zoning off of that.
R1, District 7. So even though it's got city code, it's got county public works.
It's
that's
road.
With us. It'll
because
be forever.
Of our road crossing into city property.
Until we dedicate that road to the city.
Right. Correct.
Okay. Cool. Sounds good to me. Okay.
Any questions? Okay, I have here the original street plug permit that the applicant has already signed. So this is ready for signature.
Okay, great.
Should I leave with you? Okay. That's all I have.
Bob, can you tell us anything about why we wouldn't just be able to approve this in an admin? What could possibly be controversial about this that we would need to...
Nothing, and that was our request for today specifically because Greg Jacoby wanted to keep moving, but that would be my recommendation going forward.
I want these... I think the board's opinion is that these be expedited as fast as possible if they're not controversial at all.
The county or the city are the only people with objections. Once we've said, hey, it's no...
Really, the intent of a street plug is to facilitate future development. They just need to check in with us before they move forward.
Any public consternation would be purely somebody trying to be spiteful. There's absolutely no public impact other than to the folks trying to get across.
So for the record, Public Works Director Rob Brandis has said that this is not a... There's no potential for a conflict or a challenge other than, just maybe perhaps spite on this issue. Its original intent of a street plug was to facilitate future development, to keep that open for that purpose. And so that intent was decades ago. And if there's nothing in the record that said that it was controversial then, or an irrigation district wanted to keep that for access or something like that, but that doesn't seem to be the case with this, so I would entertain a motion right now to approve this street plug application on Arroyo Drive.
So moved.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries 2-0.
And I would just add that obviously, yeah, we do the vetting prior. So
yeah.
If it's a question for Forestry, we're calling Dave. If it's
right.
Hit Parks, we're calling Parks. So if
irrigation district.
This one's really
it's hammered up by the time it gets here.
Awesome. Item number three is quarterly reports. Perfect. I have an 11 o'clock conference call that I'd really like to miss, but it seems like we're on schedule enough that I may have to be on it. Unless you want to take... No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate the offer.
Been here long enough already, I bet.
Yeah, I'll make this quick for you. So some of this may be rehashed. You may have already heard some of this, but since how this is kind of an official update, I'll go ahead and rehash it. Just an update from our timber sales sold in April of 17. We sold 4 timber sales with a gross revenue of $2.87 million for 6.2 million board feet, and we averaged $465 per 1,000 board feet. In contrast to last year's sales that were already laid out when I got here last year, we sold 9 sales that generated gross revenue of $1.8 million for the same amount of volume, 6.3 million board feet, and we averaged $287 a thousand. We tried to incorporate a bunch of efficiencies in that. We were removing twice as much volume per acre, which tends to lead to lower logging costs, leads to more money for the purchasers to put on the stump for the value of the timber. The moral of the story is the numbers don't lie. We can get more for our timber, and we'll continue to do what we can to get more for our timber in the future.
Do you see any drop-off in the market or at all?
The market is very strong right now.
Construction is...
Construction's good. The softwood lumber agreement with Canada is having a huge impact on the markets.
Is anybody buying pine?
The veneer plants are buying some pine. It's one of the lower valued species, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's not those grade utilizers of it right now.
Do you have an idea of what our mix in our portfolio? We have 30% pine, 10%?
Probably closer to about maybe sub 10%, maybe
really?
5%. Yeah.
Okay.
The biggest, obviously, is Douglas fir, followed by white fir,
okay.
And then pine,
okay.
And cedar.
Oh, that's good.
Because
I just know that when we've been purchasing trees, you know, we've got a, you know, 3 or 4 species purchased. Most of it is Doug fir, but we are buying pine to put in the ground in our, you know, not high class soils and
right.
Tough places to get re.
Exactly. There are places that dictate pine is a better species to have on that ground. Unfortunately, it's a lower value, but that lower value is better than no value,
and
obviously.
There's no way to predict what the market's going to do in the future if a rough and ready opens up or a small. There's a market for that. How do you predict 60 years?
Yeah, it'd be great if that ended up changing or maybe one of the other facilities. D.R. Johnson, for example, used to utilize pine and cut grade pine, but they don't anymore.
Right.
But if that opened up, that'd be great. Right now, the moral of the story is it doesn't pay to grow a pine to be big.
And CLT originally was marketed, because I was on a panel at the Oregon Business Leaders Summit almost 3 years ago, as an ability to utilize sub-quality in the mix, and that's not what I'm hearing at a DR Johnson now. They're wanting, I guess, and maybe these preliminary ones, high-grade stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting everything together with what you would... Qualities, no junk is going into these panels. That's where I was originally. Like when you put plywood together, you can put filler stuff in the middle. They're not doing that with these panels.
And I think that's just in its infancy. I think there's a lot of development to come. You'll probably start to see maybe some grades of CLT coming out.
Okay.
And as those grades develop, maybe there'll be room for that lower grade timber in it. But
well, that'll provide a lower cost, because if you're putting in a high grade stuff, your costs are going to be higher.
Yes.
But right now they're all showcase projects to where cost isn't probably the biggest consideration. It's the fact that they're doing it with CLT, but eventually when they're building lots of homes or lots of structures, they're going to want to bring that price down, which maybe
That'll be good. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's...
The fact that they're going that way to use wood again, now that it's their idea to cut wood down, yeah. So cut all you want.
Yeah. It's really in its infancy. It's nice to see that sort of development, given the way the industry's been over about the last 20 years. I think that's a good positive to see, and it'd be nice to see some more of that sort of development in the industry, to be honest with you. The only other point that I would say is, in terms of the timber sales, is we transitioned this year from the old historic sealed bid followed by oral auction process to sell our sales to a straight sealed bid, give us your best number, one-time shot. And if you assume that the difference between number one and number two was the premium that we got on that. In other words, if you assumed if we did it the old way, number one would only pay 10 cents more than number two to buy the timber sale. The difference in that was about $260,000 to the county. So that was a good benefit to the county moving to that system.
One of the worries that I think I'd heard in the past about doing sealed bids is that there would be like collusion among purchasers, because there's only a handful of them. They could easily get together and say, hey, you guys want that track, I'll take this track, or what have you. The fact that there was a difference means there obviously isn't collusion, because they didn't do a very good job of it. That would have been, you know, one of the considerations, but I think that there wasn't.
I think this world right now we're in, where there's essentially more of a timber shortage than there is a timber surplus, doesn't lead to that sort of a situation anymore. I think in the timber days of the 80s, when there was a glut and more of timber on the market, there was maybe some unspoken things where you just didn't go over here to bid on timber. I don't think that world exists. If it ever did, we would certainly react accordingly to change the way we sold the sales.
One of my concerns is that Murphy, having purchased a significant amount of ground, are they going to be all stocked up and not need wood at some point, or how are we considering?
I think that point may have came this year, to be honest with you. This was the first year that Murphy Company did not purchase some of our timber sales.
And they seemed okay about it.
Yeah, they were rich with timber in their portfolio, so it did have an impact. But the other purchasers don't know what that purchaser's situation is.
We may have to put you on hold, because you've got some young people. Coming in. Come on in, guys. Let's
come on in.
Yeah, feel free. Happy Independence Day.
Good morning.
Want to tell us a little bit about who you are?
Yes. We're from River Valley Preschool.
Excellent.
Yes, and we are coming over to sing patriotic songs.
Great.
To thank you for being workers for us in the city.
Sure. Happy to serve. Come on in, everybody.
And then... to celebrate July 4th.
Great.
Happy birthday for our nation.
Well, glad to have you guys here. Come on in, everybody. Look at all the patriotic flags. That's excellent. Looks great.
That's your liberty.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming. Are you guys going to sing?
Yes, we
are. Great.
So, our first song is God Bless America.
Cool.
All right, okay. Ready?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
God bless America.
Oh, good, I love that one.
Yeah.
Here we go.
You're a grand old fire.
Forgot anybody.
Lost a pound.
Just like herding cats.
Yeah. We'll put them to work. Well, that was great.
Okay, I don't think I can beat that.
No.
Okay. Moving on. Inventory updates, kind of an ongoing thing. I did send the data to the contractor for the update basically from last year. Still working on some mapping issues with GIS, but that's very close to being up to him, communicating back and forth, cleaning up some errors and whatnot.
We took the forestry, when you hosted the forestry group, which I really appreciate doing, you talked about maybe getting a better understanding of kind of like how to manipulate the numbers. And that's, you know, as an ongoing, it's great to have the inventory, but you guys really want to dial in and say, well, if we do this, we get this. And I don't know how you do that, but you,
yeah,
know, you guys are,
so we're
going to
be working with
around
the contractor going forward. So basically the program, the way it is, just assumes a fixed regime. So in other words, you get started ground zero, you go out, say year 15, you pre-commercial thin, blah, 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 and it's kind of the maximum regime per se. Well, not every piece of ground has that sort of a path to
right.
it. So it's kind of taking maybe this group of site indexes that might be lower and saying, no, we're going to manage these more on an uneven age management
yeah.
type of a trajectory, and it maybe has these sequences through its lifetime. And then maybe these middle ones is a mix of that in conjunction with more of an aggressive even age stand management mm-hmm. trajectory. And then these higher end ones are more of an even age stand trajectory. And that kind of helps fine-tune the growth path of all of those different regimes going forward. So we're really just in our infancy trying to get this thing going and telling us the returns, and then we'll be fine-tuning that stuff going forward.
Besides the general volume number that we have, I think that's going to really prove cost-effective. You know, we really want to depreciate this investment and maintain it, certainly, but telling us, you know, like you've got a track that we toured up there that you're going to go in and do some finning on. I know you want to know, what's the bang for the dollar? I know that was the question, I think, with the other foresters, is the bang for the buck. They would have seen, and they're not applying their understanding to necessarily our ground, which you have intimate knowledge of. Is there a bang for the buck of doing another thinning process? Or do you, if you take it out 20, 30 years, you get to a better place of just doing even stand management and resetting that ground?
Yes.
That's the question really in his mind of, like, does it make sense to do what I'm doing, or should I do it something else, when you have those questions?
And those are things that you can plug. You can take it today and say, okay, this is what it is today. Let's assume that we go in and maybe thin out this component of it. What does that do for it 10, 15, 20 years down the road, versus maybe a different prescription that you might do to it? What does that do for it down the road? So those options will be another part of the process.
It's nice that we have a tool other than you just kind of, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, but.
Yeah, I mean, you got to kind of mix the tool with the knowledge that you have and the folks that you have. But yeah, we're in a good place, and we're just in the start of the beginning of that curve knowledge with that program. But I think we've got a lot to do.
I think a program like that too, when you get somebody coming through the door with environmental issues, you can show them that you're actively participating in forest management.
Yes.
That you've got something in place.
We continue to do the plots. We're handling that in-house with no extra cost to the department. My goal for the department is to be doing about 2,500 acres a year, basically between about 2.5 guys through the course of the year, getting those plots in on the ground, and we're doing a pretty good job. We had a great year this year. I think we overshot the 2,500 acres by a little bit, but like I told the guys, the goal is to hit 2,500 acres, because in 10 years we'll be doing those 2,500 acres again. There really is no benefit to doing 3,000, because now you have this windfall that you have to make up in 10 years of 3,000, really, to keep your data refreshed. So doing a great job there. Everything's going good. We did move from hand cards to data collectors. I did a bunch of research and working with IT. Finally decided the way to go was a $300 or $400 iPad as a data collector. It's not great for the woods here in the wintertime, per se, but we do a little extra protection to it. The cost is $300 or $400 versus $3,000 or $4,000 for a data collector. So you can break one or two and still be money ahead on the things. Makes it much more efficient. We can just take that data, record it on an Excel spreadsheet in the field, upload it to the PC, get it to the contractor. So those are some great things that we've done in terms of the inventory. In terms of grants, we're still working on a FEMA grant for some fuels reduction work. That's ongoing. We haven't been awarded that money yet. I have a little bit of work to do, but it's kind of taken a lower priority list on my to-do list in the immediate future. We were awarded $19,000 of Title II grant money to help out with expenses on our youth tree plant, and that's big to take some of that stress off of our program, handling all of that. The Title III SRS money is no longer being handled through county forestry. That's been moved, and we're not dealing with that anymore. Good thing.
It's a good thing. Sorry about that. That was my brain.
No, that's...
I appreciate an administrative oversight kind of a deal, but it works. It's too much of a challenge with the people. Jenny does a much better job knowing what the outcomes need to be and facilitating that.
Yeah, and you had some specific goals that needed that sort of attention.
Yeah, and it's better. It's a lot better.
Yep. Surplus tracts, we did sell 6 properties, generated just under $150,000. We'll be looking at options for that going forward.
But it also saved us that $2 in
that's exactly right.
That acre every year that we paid ODF for fire protection. So summertime is not what you make. I really appreciate him making that point. We write a check every year, and if we don't have to write that, that's money in the pocket. That's so great.
Yeah. We do have 5 identified for this upcoming auction that Mr. Watson was talking about earlier. Hopefully we'll do well on those.
I do. One track is minimum bid might be $500,000 on it, so you can buy some ground with that.
We'll go try and buy some ground with that.
Yeah.
I do have one property identified that adjoins us in another location as a possible purchase. Talking with the owner right now to see if we can come up with some options on that. Stay tuned. I'll fill you in as that starts to generate forward. Did hold our forestry field trip on 6/13. Wished everybody could have come to that, but with your guys' rules, that wasn't an option, so apologize. But we'll look at next year to see what to do, see if that goes back to Coos or one of the other counties. But certainly we'll reach out and see if somebody wants to go with me.
Just real quick on that, I think we should include the tribes. I think that would be an interesting, just Tim Vander, I don't know if you know who I'm talking about, but I can get you know who I'm talking about. In Douglas Calgary. County would be an interesting, they've got 6,000 acres they manage too. I know they expressed, the commissioner expressed an interest in, well, that would have been kind of cool to get in a picture on this.
And then the only other thing that I have is we're continuing with our reconnaissance and layout for the 2018 timber sale program in conjunction with everything else we're doing. We've got some kind of our ideas, and we're going out and making sure it fits on the ground and everything. But that'll be an ongoing process here for the next few months, getting that with lines around it and ID'd and cruised and everything.
One of the other really important efficiencies that Dave has done is instead of marking every tree, he writes a prescription if you're doing a thin. So there's a contractor who buys it, gets an understanding of what it is that he's looking to accomplish so that they're not spending a bunch of staff time marking every single tree they want to keep. That seems like a really,
yeah,
that's a model. I know Perpetua did that when they were 10%. Well, you probably did that there.
Yeah, so basically what it does is it takes all of that front-end work of marking all of that timber for several weeks with several gentlemen doing the work on the ground as we try to develop a prescription for it and sample mark an area and say, this is what we want it to look like. And then our administrator will work with you through the progress of the sale to get that finished product through the sale. Basically, they pay for what they remove anyway, so rather why go out and mark all that timber? That's basically what does that finished product look like when we're all done.
That's great. Cool. Anything?
Oh, that's good.
Thanks, Mr. Streeter.
All right,
Director
thank you.
Streeter. Appreciate it. We've
thank
got
you.
Item number 4 is finance report and business update. Mr. O'Hare. One of the things while he's coming up I discussed with Councillor Hicks yesterday is their workload is tremendous, and it's actually making having a potentially negative impact on the production, I guess, performance of some of the departments. Talking to him preliminary about what are those things that you could potentially outsource to an outsourced legal counsel for contract services, and that we could get, you know, to where we don't do contracts in-house anymore. We've got a contract lawyer who reviews those, provides us a template or what have you, makes the office run more efficiently. I'm just looking to try to find a streamlined way of getting things through the legal office. I know that's been a big concern of every program that I oversee and liaison with. That's a sticking point. And they do great work in legal, but it takes them a long time, especially with they are facilitating in excess of 8 lawsuits right now that I can think of, and so just stuff like that.
bogs me down. So we'll get a report and recommendation to the board at some point.
That sounds good. So I have just two things I wanted to bring to the board's attention. First, I want to move forward on the biweekly payroll, so just confirming it, the best date that we can see of right now is October 1st to implement. That gives a full 3 months prior to, which is what we agreed with on with a couple of the unions, that we would give them at least 90 days notice. And so just letting the board know that we're moving forward with October 1.
Do you need an order or resolution? Because I want that done.
Well, no, I don't need an order or resolution. In my email, I'm going to say the Board of Commissioners has approved
good.
October 1 as the start date. So I thought I'd let you know what
you've
approved.
You can use that word shall.
Did you agree to
it? Yes.
You can use that word shall in there anywhere you want.
Yes,
shall
has approved.
Shall implement
yes.
on October 1.
Yes.
Cool.
So, and then the second thing I have is for the management partners, the Public Works Review, that I want to finalize that report. So if you folks have any feedback.
I'll finish my review today.
Okay, yeah, sooner the better. I'd like to make that next week if I can to notify the vendor management partners that here's whatever comments we have, finalize the report, please. And so those were the two active things that I didn't know if you want to hear about all the other stuff, but those are the two active pieces I
needed. I don't have time today, but
right.
I think those are big deals moving forward. Anything? No. Okay.
Okay. Thank you for the budget, for approving supplementals, and I noticed on NBC 5 News last night they actually talked about Josephine County budget and the approval of the supplemental, and that the major piece was the winter storm cleanup.
Yeah,
that was
good.
The major part.
That was the highlight.
Yes.
Well, again, I really appreciate Chris putting those descriptions down at the bottom, and I think we talked about my concern. It's just really important that we have it clearly delineated so it can't be misconstrued.
Yeah, right.
That's great.
Good point.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay. Other business of the board? And the ones that I had was renaming facilities, BOM to facilities, the managers to directors. So that's been accomplished. Thanks, JJ. Anything, Commissioner DeYoung?
Well, I yesterday I was at
COG.
RB COG. And then we had a real quick presentation from Shake Alert. A gentleman from SOU was there. Shake Alert is basically seismographic sensors planted throughout Oregon, Washington, California. They've got one over at Roxanne, I think, in Medford. They have an interest to put one in Josephine County. Roy Lindsay is going to, from the city council, is going to try to, he and I agreed that it might be a good idea to bring the guy over to have a presentation at a City of Grants Pass workshop with the board attending. To hear the entire presentation, doesn't take very long. But I think it, Professor Smead did a presentation to the council about 6 or 7 years ago, and it was kind of the beginning of the Acadia thing. Nobody even knew what Acadia was, they didn't know the history behind it, so on and so forth. But now I think that it is there, it's a little bit farther up in people's mind, and more people are aware of it. I think it's time that if we've got an opportunity to be a recipient of one of these seismographic sensors, it probably wouldn't hurt us a bit to follow into that program. That's one of those that once you start into it, then you've got a place at the table moving forward. So Roy, I told him I'd bring it up to the board, and Roy, if I call him this afternoon, joint workshop for us over there so we can talk freely.
Great. Rob, what was that well that we had out on that Hatch Bros property for? Was that anything to do with the seismic?
Well, yeah, it's a well on the, that corner parcel in the northeast corner of the industrial park, and somebody figured out that it was seismically sensitive, so there could be earthquakes like halfway around the world and the water column, nothing would move.
Yeah.
It just bizarre.
Well, it didn't look like a typical well. I mean, it was fenced and it had
I think once they found that out, but it wasn't drilled to be seismic. It was just a well, I think, and somebody at some point notices it. That's weird.
Do you remember what Dutch Bros said that they were going to build around it, but that didn't?
No, it's on the next parcel over from DB. It's on the county-owned parcel.
It's on ours?
For sure.
Okay.
For sure. I don't know if you remember for sure. I think it is. I don't even think it's on the four. I think it's on the park.
I thought it was part of the, like...
The DB?
Yeah, it's on that new DB property where they built the warehouse. And
so.
They were talking about their preliminary designs of incorporating it into their parking lot.
Maybe that's it,
like
working
that.
Around with the parking lot.
Because it isn't on the next DB, and I know it isn't on ours.
Okay.
Because it was easily... I could walk to it, and there was that culvert
out
there. No big deal.
So maybe it ended up in their parking lot.
I was more interested about, you know, the history of what it was used for, because it might be...
What did you say about it?
It's somehow, somebody figured out, I don't know if it's USGS or whatever, but there could be an earthquake literally thousands of miles away in the water column. That thing was seismically sensitive to it. Made absolutely no sense, but it did. They could actually put a graph out there, and they saw the water column and that thing moving based on earthquakes thousands of miles away.
Okay.
It's hooked to the bottom of Crater Lake.
It is. Exactly.
Isn't everything?
With that airplane.
Yeah.
So, item number six is board business. We have on planning applications. In the last month or two, we've had a couple of appeals of decisions, and I think that's really what I want to chat about today. There's potentially other issues, but really I just want to focus on solving, potentially trying to solve this problem. I had a couple of constituents come and talk about maybe other applications that have this same challenge for both the full county, but really Mr. Dijon Bay is the crux of, you know, having these standards so that he can apply something that, you know, even if it doesn't make sense to him, he's applying a standard, and then the only, I guess there's two different options, as far as I'm aware, of how you can mitigate that challenge. They can either go out for getting an engineer to come up with a proposed alternative standard, or they can appeal the decision of really the planning director based on a condition from Public Works. To the Board of Commissioners, which really seems kind of cumbersome and laborious for everybody. I mean, those books don't just come together. Somebody has to do them. The noticing requirements, the convening of both the appellant, planning staff, public works staff. You've got a couple of people that are there representing a position, and then the board's and legal's time. That seems laborious from my perspective, for maybe something that we can work out on the back end that facilitates it differently. So that's my goal today, is that we work together to kind of come up with a potential way to maybe expedite adopting draft standards, where those are at, because I think that could probably help this challenge. But that's just my proposed, one of the options that I think we have out there. And that,
real quick on that point. I talked with Pat, and we've come up with a game plan on how to get the document, because I have the changes, but we haven't got the document. Pat, I probably has talked with you. The easiest way is to unadopt the old standard and then readopt a complete standard versus parts of it. And so we're right now at Public Works typing that stuff into there.
Great.
And we're going to have it to legal by a week from tomorrow. And so however long it would take to get to legal to you guys is how soon we'll get there.
One of the challenges that I've heard is that the proposed standard is still somewhat challenging. So if you've got a 5-acre parcel and they've got a 330-foot, you know, frontage, your standard may or may not be, but it could be 400 feet or something like that. What I'm looking for ideally is that there's a fair amount of latitude that you can apply elements of engineering criteria, such as site distance, topography, provides for you to use your expert discretion to try to arrive at a solution for the applicant. The alternative, Rob and Chuck, is that the board is looking to try to make those interpretations and decisions. And we're ideally not qualified. We are given that authority as a road authority, but we're looking for your, that's why you're here, Mr. Dijon Bay, is to provide some expert direction on the challenges of each and every application, because I think, as Mr. Commissioner DeYoung said, we can't apply a blanket standard of a standard from DC or really anywhere else. You know, those 17 different incursions that were taking place on the last application, I guess within a 2 mile radius or 2 mile stretch of road, that's a different situation than building a brand new road and ideally putting every place adequately staggered or what have you. And you know, sometimes the idea of having everybody over that two parcel on one driveway has merit in my mind, that people would only try to access the road at limited points. But topography wise, it may not always work. And so that's what I'm looking for you to have a standard, but also the discretion within that standard to make your engineering recommendation of this is another way it could work.
Just briefly, what the general policy of my group and Rob is, if you have an existing lot, we will do everything possible to put a driveway in no matter what. We just pick the best location. And okay. The reason for that is if you don't provide, it's possibly a taking, because they have no legal access.
Right.
And that's really more of a law question. So for anyone who comes in for a driveway on an existing lot, that spacing standard is very flexible because we're not going to buy somebody's tax lot. The hard part is when you get into the developments, the harder part. We actually did look at several other counties, and we actually are pretty close to the average of all those other counties on the proposed standards. So there's a few counties that are significantly less, but they probably have, an example is Curry County. I mean, there's really not the development, and kind of speaking here, Julie can correct me, but they don't really probably have the subdivisions going in or the different road systems that are the higher class, I'm guessing at that.
Yeah, they're a different animal. Yeah. I think I'd want
But to we look. Did look at those, and we looked at Jackson County and several other counties, and we are less than probably half of them, what we're proposing.
Jackson, Benton, and Lane were the other three that we looked at that were kind of right in the middle.
What about Douglas?
They were not willing to give us information right now. They're in the middle of reviewing theirs as well. So, and they've got a new director coming in, so they've got a few balls in the air. So that was the fourth one.
Okay.
I think what I would just add, too, is with respect to the standards that we had to default to for a while, as I'm sure you've heard Chuck say, is in the absence of having adopted, that's the jumping off point. And again, these are all not written in stone, so the hope being that in these developments that we can get the developers in to talk to us, and that with these couple of recent ones has not been the case. And I'm going to defend my department, obviously, but it's not been for lack of trying. The McMahon one, we had six different times over 6 months, said, please come in, let's see if we can't figure something out. We couldn't get them to come in. The more recent Brothers one, three times, could not get them to come in. The flip side being the one that Mr. West did, kind of grumbling, got it in. Eventually, he's got something he's moving forward with that worked. County's happy. We got him to gang it together with another parcel. That's how the process should work. But we're not throwing speed bumps for the sake of speed bumps. You know, I had Debbie take a look. Over the last 17 years, we've had almost 400 different partition subdivisions. We've only had two ever where we've had to write this note. They've been in the last month. So I don't know what's changed, but I think history kind of shows that we've worked with applicants to find something that works for both. And I'm hoping the new standards will keep this to a dull roar. But my fear also is if word is on the street that, hey, if you cowboy something in, you put enough money into it, it says, you're not going to possibly make me rip this out and put it where it should be, it might have some traction. And that worries me. I'd be lying if I said
my challenge is that I've heard stuff, and I can't even remember, it might have been a Wix. You know, conditions that are not, they're not something that I endorse. And I think that it's really key from both planning, building and safety. I don't care if it's parks. I don't care what program it is. It really needs to reflect the policy and the attitude of the board. Mm-hmm. And so conditions, and I'm going to use this example of widening one of the Applegate roads. That's not in our TSP. It seems like there's discretion where it's wanted, and then it isn't where it isn't wanted. And that's a challenge for me from a policy standpoint. You don't get to do that. I don't care who you are. We're not widening North Applegate, South Applegate. In my lifetime, it's not in a plan. It's not going to be proposed in the next plan. Does it need to happen? Probably. I would agree. We are not meeting our minimum requirements for maintenance. The state can't keep and maintain the asset they have. And so that, for me, is, and it doesn't take very many of those before I wonder, what are these things that are being imposed at discretion of the engineer's office, public works, that are not consistent, they're not defensible, to me. Because if I was asked in an appeal, is that an appropriate policy for conditioning the distance of a driveway approach, what have you, the answer is no, it isn't. And so that's where I want to be tracking, so it makes us all look good, that when it does, if it's totally legit and it makes to appeal, that your office isn't being looked at as inconsistent with the board's office, that we're all tracking on the same plane. And if there is a reason why we're conditioning it based on an expansion, that it's in the TSP that we've approved. It's like the airport layout plan. We approve those for a reason. They're supposed to act as guiding documents for exactly what we're talking about here. And without that, it seems arbitrary to me that we're conditioning proposed developments based on something that nobody's actually approved at a policy level. It's not in ODOT's. It's not in ours. So that's where I get, wait a second, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, the North Applegate, the issue came up after we adopted our TSP, because our TSP is 10, 11, 12 years old, something like that.
That's right.
And the issue was with the vineyards going in, and there was a contractor hauling rock through there, and school buses going through there, and bike riders going through there, we were probably getting a dozen to two dozen phone calls about near misses in that area, on that road.
Yeah.
That was the reason we conditioned a widening on that road. We have not conditioned a widening on any other road the whole time I've been here.
Right.
It's a major collector, and we had a lot of feedback from the public. And that was the decision.
So the other thing is that we wouldn't, and I'm not intimately familiar, but I just as that as an example, I'm not expecting us to widen it on that side of the road. We're going to widen it on topography-wise, which makes the most amount of sense to me is to do it on the flatter EFU side of the road. And I'm not an engineer. I'm just practically speaking, I would rather not have to dig into a bank and move an irrigation line to accommodate a widening of the road. I'd do it in the flatter section, EFU. So that's, that's the kind of conversation that comes forward if we do approve widening of North Applegate. It's like, well, how is that going to go? Where is our right-of-way, where we can do it within our existing right-of-way, where we're not acquiring the right-of-way? Those kinds of conversations and stuff. So that's the challenge of doing it before it's gone through that deliberation.
And I did ask the engineer to provide me because he said you couldn't build it that way because of the alignment. I said, well, show me a center line alignment that meets our standards. And he drew it right down the center of the road, so the existing road. So it didn't have to move based on engineering standards. Do you fill on one side
right. And
take from somebody else, or do you take from... Those are tough decisions, and that's a policy decision, not mine. So I just held the center line of what the engineer provided
yeah. And
said that's what the dedication would be based on.
Well, and I think the proposed widening, obviously, we had no expectation that development was going to trigger it. But that's the starting point. It has to be same as if someone came in with the current standard, we'd say, look, you got to get 660 if you can. The hope being that encourages them to come in there and have a discussion. The Bolet one was a nightmare, absolutely. But we finally got to a point to say, there's other ways we can address that. Can you look at putting up a street light? Can we maybe knock the corner back here? The trail off-road, that didn't happen. But ways to minimize that damage. That's the negotiation that I'm concerned gets short-circuited if anyone is allowed to appeal and it's upheld. Blanket statement, obviously, but when that needle
that
when
really
that needle
back
moves,
to my point,
yes,
that we're all tracking on the same thing.
Yes,
because if we solve this before it gets to a public appeals process,
that's the best case.
It is the best case, yes. And whatever it takes. If you need the liaison as part of that conversation when you have those challenges, first degree, you work it out, 400 of them, fine. But at what point you're getting it to a potential appeal, I would love to have an opportunity for the liaison to kind of come in and say, well, this is where I would suggest we can move things before it comes to us. We do this on everything, from parks disagreements to other stuff.
Okay, there is going to have to be coordination between the departments on that point, because the county is under a statutory timeline to process land use applications. And so I just want to submit that, okay, once it becomes immediately apparent on either side of this application, somebody needs to tell the other. And if you're going to get involved, I mean, the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
So I would really just emphasize that if planning finds out that there's going to be an appeal on this matter, I mean, there's not time to waste. I'm telling you what you already know, but it bears saying.
I'm looking for it before that triggers, because after that triggers, an appeal is filed. The ability to kind of negotiate that element once you set that land use with the clock and ticking, I don't know really what. It's just that we're putting our best effort forward, utilizing all the resources available. Because even that, I mean, not that I just want to delegate Commissioner DeYoung's time.
Yeah, he does.
But that is more efficient to the overall public good in the office than going through the whole appeals process and putting up with all that stuff,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's my goal. If we're checking out, we did that. We leaned into it hard and couldn't reach a resolve.
And you may not stop all of them from going to the full gambit. But.
Well, like the McMahon, though, I mean, once a month I contacted the engineer. Finally, he said, my client has told me I can't talk to you anymore before the appeal hearing. So it's like,
you have folks that are willing to roll the dice on the nuclear options. I don't know, is there a way to condition some kind of forced mitigation, but saying, hey, a condition is you have to come in and meet once or twice with.
That's what I would think, if that's a possibility.
It's a Wally question or a partial Julie question, but I mean,
Before you can file appeal, you have to touch, you go to third base.
You got
to
make an effort.
Before the board will hear an appeal, they need to have done this last box or what have you. I think ideally if we can just implement it as putting it out there as an option.
Options need to be explored.
Yeah, it's worth exploring.
One of the things that I've tried to talk to all managers about is if you haven't talked to your liaison before you're bringing whatever issue to the board, your chances are not, you're rolling the dice. If you have talked to your liaison and that person is advocating from one of these three seats, your chances are so much better that the whole board is going to go in that direction. And that's what I would tell the applicant, is like, yeah, you can appeal it, but if you're not bringing your liaison commissioner who's heard this issue and feels a particular way, we're going to do novo all of this stuff, so it's not as though they're going to hear something we don't already or aren't going to hear. How successful are you going to be? So I think there's an applicant benefit.
On the last one, and Julie says she's fixed this issue over planning, but we knew there was an appeal. But we didn't hear until the Monday. Our comments were due Wednesday.
Right.
We didn't know what the appeal was even about. I mean, we could guess, but without knowing, so.
How do you correct something you don't know about?
Yeah, how do I let Commissioner DeYoung know that this is why we're doing this?
Right.
I mean, suddenly I'm in the time frame. I have to sit down and type something. I mean, I don't.
What Chuck's referring to is, the application that that people fill out wasn't asking for a statement of appeal. The code requires it. We just had this with the Brimstone one. The code requires it, but staff was not requesting it. And, when usually they'll put a sentence or two, something, but we had it with Brimstone and then with the Bob Hart one. And they don't put the statement of appeal. So you're going into a hearing not knowing how to prepare for it. And I told staff, no, don't even accept it if they don't have a statement of appeal. We send it back. And I actually did just send one back because they didn't have a statement of appeal on it. So the problem is, it takes so long. One of the problems I do see is, it was on this, I'm not sure if it was the last one, but sometimes, they take an appeal in and they don't really look at it closely until they start working on that file, doing their staff report, and then they're like, oh, we don't even have a statement of appeal on it. So, there's those processes we're trying to clean up to make better as well. But hopefully that's not an issue anymore. Because hopefully they're getting that statement of appeal when they're taking it in.
Where does ex parte communication come into this thing?
Yeah.
I mean, if we do this ahead of time,
I would recommend
declaring
That's all you have to do.
Being expressly clear in terms of what your involvement or knowledge about the case is.
Right.
Putting it on the record at the beginning of the proceeding.
I do think, you know, a way to avoid a lot of the issues are just to cover more at the pre-app stage. You know, and now that we don't charge for pre-app, we're streamlining our process, of course. I should say we don't charge pre-apps on some things. But we still will be saying, instead of going into all the detail, we do tell them they need to go work with Public Works on it. We recommend they work with Public Works on their access before they apply. So,
well, on the last
that's
one,
really important.
On the last one, it was unclear to me Public Works' concerns, and then the fallback was to 650 feet. And I realized you have to do that because that's the only thing you have. Mm-hmm. That was the only guideline you have, but that was on a national stand. I need to know what your concerns are. You know, if you've been out there and said, you know, they can't see. You can't see 100 feet down the road. Then that's a concern. But in my mind, what I read said, nope, we're going to fall back on this national standard. We're going to be cornfield in Nebraska, for Pete's sake. I don't know what all of it falls under that. And 600 feet, 400 feet, you know, I'm looking at a football field as being 300 feet. And if I'm sitting there at my driveway and I look down there and 300 feet down there's a car coming, I'm going to pull out. Because it's safe to me. I mean, I got to give some credit to the driver, and the accident side of it didn't show any thing out there that we had any real problem with accidents.
But Chuck, something you said was that you had to rely on a national standard based on legislation. I think the challenge that I've heard is that didn't say you couldn't rely on state standards. It said that you could
or local standards
adopt
if we
local
had,
standards.
We had to adopt something. Yeah, we could have readopted ODOT.
Yeah, I don't.
Can we adopt county standards? Can
well,
county
yeah, that's actually what I'm proposing to submit.
Okay, all right. That's you're already down that trail then.
Yeah, and it's been that way for a little while.
But even with those in place, so that doesn't entirely fix it. So if the process works like it should, we should have the applicant having an engineer, not a land use consultant, coming in and saying, "Hey, here's how I think we could get there. We can't get to 600, but would you be okay with 275 if we do this, this, and this?" That's how the process should work.
That exactly. I agree with that. So is that
it's a little arduous, though, if you're just trying to look at putting a driveway that I have to hire an engineer potentially for $25,000. I don't know. You know, what is that threshold?
It would be $25,000.
That we couldn't. The engineer inside, in-house, Chuck, your office, how much can they facilitate as far as, you know, giving options, having clear guidance about what those standards, what that criteria is that they have to meet? What I've heard is that they have to go to another municipality or what have you and figure out another standard that could apply that makes this okay. And my challenge is from a county liability, and I know you're trying to protect that, ultimately we are sued, not necessarily you, if there's a challenge on that. Just because Medford adopts it as a standard doesn't mean it's okay. Doesn't mean it's safe. Doesn't
That's
mean
right.
it's right.
That's right. But the engineer submitting it is saying that he's looked at it and he feels it is appropriate. So the engineer.
What's the difference between them doing that and you doing that? Saying, I've looked at this and it's safe.
Well, and that's kind of where I come up with what I have in my draft standards. If I sit there and I tell Brothers, you know, I like, you know, 200 feet because it's, you know, Curry County standards. Then when they come in with the 200 feet, I'm then approving something that I have designed.
Just because you set a standard on it doesn't mean you designed it.
It does if I'm telling them to do something that's not somehow codified.
You're reviewing your own work effectively.
I don't know that I agree with that. It's the same thing that you can't give legal advice. That doesn't mean that pointing out to them, you know, an option legally isn't providing legal advice.
I could tell the engineer go look at Jackson County, but I can't sit there and say, you know, Jackson County's got 300 feet. Use that.
I don't know about that.
Well, I say let's wait and see what you come up with in the next couple of weeks. It's just a draft, right?
the problem will still be around after that.
Yeah, even if I have 100 feet for all the spacing or 10 feet for the spacing, someone's going to come in for 5 feet.
Yeah, they're going to keep asking for exceptions and variances.
Yeah, this doesn't... This
but if, but I, you know, if I, I think if the code is reasonable, say it's 100 feet, you say somebody's going to come in for 5 feet.
Yeah.
But they probably will, but I mean, it's going to knock a lot of what we're talking about out of it. I just didn't understand why that one, the last one, the Brothers one, came in. To me, that's my problem because I'm common sense, and common sense doesn't always work when you're talking government liability and engineering and things of that sort, non-traffic engineering. But common sense kicks in when I'm looking at it. I go, gee, and I didn't, you know, I'm going off of a flat map that, boy, that looks good, but heck, I don't know what the rest of it is out there.
And again, I mean, I will tell you, you know, I think the 660 is excessive, but until you get something adopted by the road authority,
something different to go by, you're bound to the 660 or 650 because that's the only thing available to you, right?
Yeah, as far as what I can have for a standard. Now, again,
how is adopting the national standard internally any different than adopting the state standard internally?
It's adopted by reference. If we don't have a standard for something, then it goes to the state.
What did we reference? Why didn't we reference the state standard?
Because this was done in 05, where we referenced it, and we didn't actually say, here is the standard, here is the access spacing standard, and ODOT's is actually the same, roughly, as what we're using. I mean, it's within feet already. So
it's in what?
It's within feet of what we're using now.
So it's six something?
It's about 600, yeah. So we're not really gaining a lot. But again, you know, we're looking at, I think the highest one I have for the high-speed road is 400 feet.
Where are these other counties getting this stuff? If you're saying that we're looking at other counties, why don't they have the same policy of having to look at another standard? And that just seems so arbitrary that they've
adopted their standard.
I know, Chuck. Where did they get theirs? Because if they're deviating from the state standard, are they just going to Deschutes standard? Or, you know, at what point does it go back to what's the source? Is it just another engineer? And then if you're looking for an engineer to have developed it based on Deschutes, and then Jackson County approves it based on Deschutes, and then we approve it based on Jackson County's, why aren't we just doing the route of Deschutes County, who said they have an engineer and say, this works for us, we're going to do 275 feet?
And that's kind of what we're doing, and that's what I did in 05 when I wrote the standards. I went by past experience in other jurisdictions, research in other jurisdictions. And
You're not tracking what I'm saying. You're where's the source? Who's the engineer? And if there is an engineer at the end of the line in Deschutes that is the other standard, where it came from, why can't we do that engineer source here, using those others as a guide? But it feels like it all has to go back to some engineer somewhere.
And the standards are, and it's a little convoluted on the statement here, so, but the standards that I will be submitting to the board will be stamped by me.
Okay.
I don't know, Jackson County adopted theirs in their transportation system plan.
Can't ever dial that number in a couple of minutes.
So I presume that, I think it was David Evans that did theirs, was part of the review on that. You know, I don't know, honestly, about Curry County or Douglas County, or I didn't ask each one. We just looked up their documents that show what it is.
Okay.
I think, Commissioner, to get to your question a bit, there's a bit of best practice, maybe to put it in terms that are a little more commonplace. So if somebody says, hey, it's best practice to change your oil at 3,500 miles, who originally said that? We're not sure. At some level, you are shooting the middle because it's, you know, you're talking about, does this increase your crash rate from 1 per million to 1.5 per million? Don't know. There's a bit of shooting in the middle for sure, but again, this just sets that initial 10 post to say, here's what we're striving for. Now come in and can we figure out a way, if it has to be less than that, how can we do that to mitigate that damage?
Right. Then you can take it case by case.
Right.
How many of those case by cases have you had that have gone successfully? Like what is it that you require on that, you know, alternative two? If you do what I say, that's fine, but if you don't,
Frequently. I mean, that's why I used the West one recently. He wasn't initially happy with it, but he's going to go to his neighbors. They're going to work out an easement so they can have a shared approach there. That that is how the system ought to work. It's not perfect, but that got him, you know. And now
it's the engineering that you go to an engineer and provide me an alternative standard, an alternative
right,
plan.
Right.
How often do you do that and it's successful?
You know, actually, it's probably about 50-50, maybe 70% successful. I mean, if they have a reasonable approach to it, I mean, if they just sit there and say, I think it's good, then I'm like, you know, where'd you get it from? Because they may or may not be an expert in that field. If they sit there and say, you know, I've looked over and I found, you know, Lane County's got one that fits my project exactly perfect. I've worked in Lane County before, so I know what it is. It'd be like, okay. You know, so it's not, you know, it's a one-page letter from the engineer if they provide
justification.
It's not like they have to go out and actually crunch all the numbers.
My life is not my own. I have an 11 o'clock conference call, but I don't feel like this conversation's done. But I do feel like we have stuff we're working on and we're making progress in it. But it seems like...
we don't have these coming up, do we? I mean,
not that I'm aware.
We don't have any more than...
One of the constituents said that he's working on three potentially right now that could be coming for the board for appeal. So it's not gone.
If they did, they'd go directly to the board now because... What we did was we told Public Works, basically, or I told Rob and Chuck, basically that we're not going to put their conditions for access on our approval. Our condition is just going to say they need to get their access approved through Public Works.
And the last two actually have that condition on them, or going to it, as it is.
The old way?
Still in draft form.
Which ones?
I think that's the general condition 4 that says you must obtain permits.
Well, the ones that were appealed were very specific conditions, this access here or shared access here. We're not going to put those specifics on ours anymore. Go work it out with Public Works and stop using planning's time to accomplish your driveway, basically.
So it's a less general, more specific appeal?
They work one-on-one with Public Works, and if they don't like what Public Works tells them...
So is that not a land use appeal anymore?
No, I suppose they could appeal the condition that said they had to get their access approved.
Right. Just a degree.
But it will eliminate the appeals going to through the planning department.
Is it outside the 150 days then, too?
I would characterize it that way. Absent authority to the contrary, yes.
Okay.
I would think so.
It's on our final decision, so you know,
sure,
they have whatever, a year to start or 2 years to start things.
Right.
So to meet those conditions, so they can't move forward with their project until they resolve it.
That to me fixes a lot of it then. I mean, again, they'd have that ability, so we go back and forth, we can drag them in for a meeting, they still don't like what they're hearing, they still have the ability to go to commissioners and say, hey, Public Works is putting some owner's conditions, can we fix this?
Yeah,
but I think this gets that 150 day timeline out, which backed you guys into a corner than having to make a decision. So maybe this forces a little more.
And like brothers, they didn't even come in and talk to us.
Yeah.
They just appealed it. So it's like...
I'd really like the liaison to have an opportunity because that practical, on the ground, you know, just saying, how come we can't do this?
And again, we didn't know the appeal until like 2 days before I had it written last time.
Try to integrate
the
liaison as much as possible as another box to check what you've done.
We need another box. It's mandatory that we have a conference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I can certainly fit into those and come to an agreement.
Well, if it gets out of the 150 day too, we could say, you know, do you want this to take a week or do you want it to take 6 months?
Right.
Come on in, we'll get this thing moving.
That's good. That's good done.
Okay. Well, that's good progress. If nothing further, the board's adjourned at 11:02.
All right. Well,
so if it gets outside the 150, then how long do we presume we have after that?